Ben, would you go next and
This
set
meeting
it
is
off
being recorded.
and popcorn it around?
Hi there, I'm Ben, council member. Nice to see you all. Pass it to Lee.
Hi, Lee, a council member. I'll pass it on to Stephen. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, thank you. Stephen Spanum, the HCAP staff attorney at AORP. I'll pass it over to Beth.
Hi, Beth, HIV Health Services. I'll pass it over to Kira.
Hi everyone, Kira, I'm council staff, and I'll pass it over to David.
David Jordan, council staff. Melina.
Melina Clark, council staff. And I think, did TJ go?
Not yet.
Nope, I haven't. Thanks, Melina. TJ Lee Miyake, council member. And I'll pass it on to Laura.
Laura Thomas, council member. Who else needs to go?
Let's pass it off to Lee.
Lee already went.
Oh, sorry about that. Yes, you did. Who else is there?
Why don't we have our two members of the public?
Members of the public.
I was about to call that, thanks. Let's have Harry go next.
Harry Bro, long-term survivor, a member of the public.
Hank?
Hank Trout, the San Francisco Principles 2020.
Thanks, guys. So the next item up is to review and approve the draft agenda. Can we bring that up? I guess everyone would have reviewed it beforehand. Are there any things that we need to add or change or? If you see anything, I don't see any raised hands about things that need to be changed or anything like this. With consent, we'll approve the draft agenda for today. Let's look at the minutes from last month. Is there any changes or recommendations that people feel they need to have set for the minutes from last month? Seeing no dissent, let's approve the minutes from, oh, Stephen.
Sorry about this. I just, it is not important to me, but in case people look at the minutes and try to email me for whatever reason, my name is spelled with an E. I don't care how anybody spells my name, but it's S-T-E-P-H-E-N. And that's my email. So I don't want people to get confused.
Thank you so much, Stephen. And so recognizing that change. Other than that recommendation, and with consent, like let's approve the minutes from last month. All right. I know, I think I'm wording that strangely. Sorry about that. Are there any announcements to be made from the council? Thanks, Kira, about making that change in the name. There are no announcements. I will remind, I think everyone received the announcement about the upcoming rally that is coming up, the Back to HIV, and that's the only announcement that I'm aware of. So we're at public comment and right on time. So I think we'll start with you, Harry, is that correct?
That's correct.
For public comment? Okay.
go?
Yes.
All right, first, thank you all for your service. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I wrote this out so that I can be concise. My name is Harry Breaux, and from blood samples at the CDC, it was confirmed I seroconverted to HIV positive in 1980. I survived through the next 15 years as a slow progressor until in December 1996, when I succumbed to 3 opportunistic infections, was given an AIDS diagnosis and a 50-50 chance to live. The summer before my hospitalization, a cocktail was introduced that stopped the continued destruction of my immune system. As a result, I'm here and alive with you today. The past 42 years have been detrimental to my physical, mental, and financial well-being, as well as that of hundreds of others. And we have been dependent on the kindness of strangers, as Blanche DuBois would say. Those strangers have mostly been the city and county of San Francisco and its tenacious Department of Public Health. However, during the last couple of years, the COVID pandemic has siphoned off a great deal of the physical, mental, and financial support for those long-term veterans of the AIDS pandemic, many of whom are well over 60 or even 70 years old, as I am. And now the progress that has been made has developed appalling results. HIV testing is down by 44% from 2019. Rates of viral suppression have dropped from 75% to 70%, and PrEP use has decreased, leading to many potential new HIV transmissions. Additionally, the city's long-term survivors of HIV/AIDS still lack adequate access to deeply affordable housing, harm reduction, mental health care, social housing, and economic assistance. The California legislature, through SB 258, recently added long-term survivors to the definition of the Mello-Granlund Older Californians Act. And now we find ourselves begging for the support needed to arrest the increasing levels of HIV transmissions and the decreasing levels of funding for the Getting to Zero initiative that has been pioneered here and, until COVID's redirection of funds, has been the shining star in the Getting to Zero programs that San Francisco humanitarianly had been spearheading. Please notice this failing and falling situation and remedy it with a recommendation to restore the funding and emphasis on HIV and bring us back to a city that cares more than is currently being registered. As we enter the 41st year of the pandemic, the city of San Francisco must recommit to treating HIV/AIDS as an urgent public health issue and must recommit funds to make up for recent losses. Thank you for your attention and consideration of this predicament.
Thank you, Harry. Well said. Hank?
Thanks, Derek. As I said, my name is Hank Trout. I've lived in San Francisco since 1980, and I am a 33-year long-term survivor of AIDS. Harry and I are two of the co-authors of the San Francisco Principles 2020. The Principles was modeled after the Denver Principles from 1983, when HIV-positive activists insisted, "Nothing about us without us." The San Francisco Principles 2020 builds on that proclamation and outlines who we are as a community of long-term survivors, the specific healthcare and economic hardships we face, and our demands to meet those needs. There are some 16,000 people living with HIV in San Francisco, and some 72% of us are now over the age of 50. AIDS has grown up. Sadly, the services available to us have been shortchanged over the last few years. We find ourselves still socially isolated after losing so many friends to AIDS, still dealing with the comorbidities brought on by the accelerated aging caused by the virus, and increasingly unable to afford to live in this city, the city we helped build. We want San Francisco to live up to its reputation as a world leader in HIV prevention, treatment, and services. And I hope you will help us push them to do that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Hank. And again, thanks again, Harry. We have about a minute. I don't know if any of the members here have any questions for Harry or Hank or comments.
I guess I'd like to know exactly what you're looking for from us.
Well, for one thing, we know that the city appropriated, right, it was $200,000 or $300,000 for mental health care, specifically for long-term survivors, but nobody knows what's being done with that money. Nobody knows where those services are or what's being offered to whom. That's one thing. Another is we need to do more to address HIV in the homeless committee, the homeless community. Viral suppression in the homeless committee dropped from 50% to 20% from 2019. So we'd like to see much more outreach and, you know, services available to homeless people. Harry, anything else you can think of?
I think that covers it well. I mean, we're asking that the city doesn't continue to kind of ignore the changes that COVID brought to the HIV fight. There's definitely been a change in funding and in just basic attention to it. And we need to make sure that the city reinstates that attention that it once had when there was a huge big program about getting to zero going on, which has seemed to been overshadowed. So we're asking that it return to that or reincorporate it or whatever the right word would be.
Thanks a lot for your statement, guys. And what I would like to do is invite you both to come. Oh, Laura Thomas, you have a question, a statement.
Well, in particular, this issue of what happened to the increased funding from last year. So I was just having that conversation a couple of hours ago with the HIV Advocacy Network, and there's, you know, people worked really hard to advocate for additional funding, and then there's the question about where it went. And I've heard that it was, you know, some of it went to Alliance Health Project, some of it went to Shanti, et cetera, but I feel like there needs to be some accountability back to the community. And so, you know, one of the challenges is that this planning council, like, we have authority over the federal Ryan White dollars and the CDC prevention dollars, but not the city general fund money. And so as the, you know, the Ryan White dollars go down and we get local general fund to replace it, we have, you know, sort of less purview over those dollars. But obviously we have very good partnership with the Department of Public Health. And I think, you know, we should be able to get this information from them. So asking DPH to give us a more specific sort of presentation on what happened with the funds that were added to the budget last year and sort of where they've gone so that consumers know where those services are. Because I do happen to know some about the HIV housing because the organization that was providing that service isn't anymore. So there's been a bunch of changes, but the end result has been that those services are not out, those dollars are not housing people with HIV yet. So, you know, just to move forward a motion from this committee to the steering committee to ask that, you know, DPH give a presentation on sort of what's been funded over the last year and where those services are and how consumers can be connected to them. That doesn't address all of the very important concerns that Hank and Harry brought, but just that one is on my mind because I was literally having a conversation about the same thing a couple of hours ago.
Thank you for your thoughtful response there, Laura, as always. Just in terms of time, because we're biting into our report time with Stephen, and I know that he's already said that he has to leave early after his reporting. I wonder if we could move ahead. What I would like to do perhaps we can, I don't know if we need to vote just yet on the recommendation that Laura put forward. Maybe we could save that at the end, towards the end. Would that be okay?
I'm going to interject here. We can't actually vote on a thing that was not agendized. So what we need to do is agendize this for next month, come up with some wording specific to it, and then we can make a motion and vote on it, okay?
That sounds good. Sorry, Laura, you were going to say?
Thank you, David. He's absolutely correct. I should know better.
Sorry about that. Let's agendize that. Harry and Hank, thank you so much for your presentation. We will make certain that you guys hear about such a presentation that Laura had recommended if we, as it moves forward. All right.
So much.
Thank you guys. And moving forward, Stephen, can we get the HCAP report?
Most certainly. I'm sorry, excuse me. I just wanted to point out the increase in issues surrounding dental services. It's something that I'm keeping my eye on and trying to support my best on. I apologize. I'm feeling a little emotional right now. So I'm going to open this up for any questions specific to the report.
Okay. I don't know if other folks had a chance to review the appoint or had any questions about the report? Thank you so much, Stephen. For whatever is going on, I hope for the best.
Yeah, I just want to thank Harry and Hank for showing up today and however I can support, I'm here.
Thank you so much, Stephen. With that, let's move forward.
Thank you.
We have the needs assessment update and the COLA targets. Are we ready?
Yeah, thanks, Derek. So today, I brought a document that Dave and I put together, which is essentially the findings of our recent community forum, as well as
Spray. Happy to our team.
Hello, who's that?
I'm not sure.
Is that you, Mickey? Might go on mute?
Oh, sorry about that.
Cool. Thanks, Mickey. So first off, I'm going to share this document with the findings as well as conclusions. This is on the full council agenda for later this month, so we definitely want to be sure to share this with you and get folks' input. We also today really need to pick targets for this year's needs assessment, so I definitely want to carve out a good chunk of time after this to talk about that. We definitely need to leave the meeting today with a solid target. So I'm thinking now is 3:20. So let's try to keep this discussion right now to by 3:55 or maybe 4, if that's okay with folks. That way we leave plenty of time to come up with a target. Okay, So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. Okay. Can folks see this document right here? Just unmute if you can't. So I'm not going to, you know, read word for word the whole document, because I think that is not totally necessary right now, since you'll be getting all of this later this month. But just to kind of summarize, so just the introduction, basically, you know, in January, this committee decided to do a community forum as well as electronic surveys in place of the 2021 needs assessment, which ended up just being kind of impossible with the pandemic. Just, it was really hard hearing back from providers, and it just presented a huge challenge, but we still really wanted to hear from people and also get some data. So that's how the forum and survey method came about. And it was during full council on the 24th. I believe there were 7 folks who we heard from that day, most of whom were council members. We also sent out 2 surveys, one to council members targeted at consumers of services, as well as another one for providers. The consumer survey got 7 responses and the provider survey got 6 responses. So first we'll go into the findings from the community forum as well as the consumer survey. So challenges with technology was a huge theme that we heard, both access to technology and the skills required to actually utilize the technology. Zoom fatigue, we heard that multiple times. Also just, and Dave put this really well here, the inherent inequity involved in, you know, demanding that these services can only be accessed via technology that only some people have access to and the skills to use. Isolation was another thing that we heard a lot. So, you know, loss of friends due to death or migration away from the city, you know, reduced social contact during the pandemic, and, you know, Zoom not really being a good substitute for in-person. We also heard a lot about challenges with the bureaucracy of the system of care, as well as limited availability of services. Yeah, again, Dave put this well, an already challenging bureaucratic experience made more difficult by the impersonal nature of remote access. That was something we heard a lot. The type of care, let's see. I'm just making sure I didn't really miss anything. Oh yeah, also we heard about just the difficulty of advocating for oneself, and folks talked about, I think, challenges like being actually heard by their providers. And also we heard again about the gap in services for those accessing via private insurance, and kind of that gap between income and like what services you qualify for if you can get Ryan White services. Also just the witnessing the struggles of the community, it sounded like that was just another big emotional burden on folks, just, you know, the observed increase in the amount of folks unhoused, as well as just everybody just having a really hard time. It sounds like just was a big collective weight on everyone. And substance use. We know that people had a lot of, and still have a lot of challenges around that. So from the provider survey, we had similar themes. Definitely isolation again and lack of community. This is all pretty similar to the consumer survey. Also just lack of support groups and community activities. And again, the disparities in technological access and ability. And here I just added a few quotes from the survey, just kind of displaying what we're already talking about. And again, more challenges with technology. This is also pretty similar to the consumer survey. One thing we heard from providers was also that if the provider was having an issue with the internet or tech stuff, that also was a barrier sometimes. And just the thing with technology is that it's really a two-way street, like both the client and the provider need to have reliable phone, internet, and the skills to use them. Also, I think a lot of the providers we heard from work with predominantly clients who are unhoused. And so we heard more specifically about issues that that community is facing. Again, just around, you know, access to technology, internet. Also, a few folks mentioned that clients who may have been facing substance use or mental health challenges had a lot of difficulty staying engaged also for like that kind of technology virtual connection, which also was a challenge for folks. Also lack of private spaces. Yeah, and again, I have some more quotes here. I'm not gonna read these ones out loud. One other insight was that some clients who may have had mobility or transportation issues might have had an easier time accessing services. We heard from one respondent that their agency had set up Zoom rooms. So basically a space that was private and had technology already set up that clients could access that way for appointments. Also, we heard that, you know, for some things such as therapy and support groups or like wellness classes became available virtually, and perhaps some clients who previously had not been accessing those services started going to stuff like that, which was a positive. So I think that's about it for our findings. And so for conclusions, we didn't come up with specific recommendations yet because we want to, you know, hear from this group and get everyone's input and see where we could take this data in terms of specific recommendations. But in terms of conclusions, I am going to actually just read this part, at least part of it. Basically, to capitalize on consumer and provider potentially increased familiarity, access, and comfort with remote care services and telehealth. Again, folks with mobility challenges who may have before had trouble maintaining engagement might now and going forward benefit from the availability of virtual appointments. We also we're thinking that perhaps agencies who are offering in-person services could potentially offer like a space for clients with a pre-set up technology in order to have their appointment. Again, we know we hear this often that psychosocial support services are very important and have increased in importance since the pandemic, just in terms of maintaining folks' emotional health and addressing isolation. We also heard again that the psychosocial interventions were less effective over Zoom, but still, you know, very important. So I think going forward, it could be interesting to figure out how to like kind of capitalize on both the virtual and the in-person for psychosocial. And again, the challenges with technology were reported just across the board, or from lack of access to a challenging learning curve. And also, you know, kind of discomfort with its disconnecting aspects. and the technology does seem to have increased the kind of existing issues with bureaucracy, just kind of more separate, if that's the right word. So that's about it. So I'm just gonna stop sharing now.
So if I could also just quickly add, so in working on these conclusions, I mean, I was working on drafting a sort of fourth conclusion around sort of what is very clearly some group of very high need, meaning, you know, our unhoused population and specifically people who are dealing with mental health challenges and substance use challenges in conjunction with that. And just trying to think about all of the interconnected correlations and causations there, including things like, you know, what's happening now with the sort of the mayor's new sort of war on crime and what that's going to potentially mean to that population. And sort of struggled with coming up with something that was, our goal here is to have sort of concrete recommendations that we can use the tools available to the council to address them. And I just felt like, honestly, I was a little sort of overwhelmed by the task at hand, and I didn't want to sort of put something forward there that felt unfinished or unhelpful. We're still sort of working on something. Oftentimes, you know, we've discussed this before, it feels like there are issues that are sometimes the greatest concern to consumers of services that are funded by Ryan White that have nothing to do with things that we have purview over and have nothing to do with HIV care or prevention services specifically. And it is always a struggle to figure out how to best address those things. And so I'm continuing to think about that. We have until the end of the month to sort of come up with something. If you guys have thoughts, I'm happy to hear them. Also sort of around recommendations, you know, it feels like we can potentially identify some things that we can do to address the concerns we heard voiced here, but I'd love to hear from you guys around your thoughts. And one additional thing, actually I'm gonna hold on to that and I'll, we can discuss it after.
Before I get to questions, like really fast, like Melinda and Jordan, like the report would be available to all the council members, correct? Like it'll be sent out to everyone, yes?
This is gonna be presented at full council this month.
Thanks, Derek. Do folks have any initial thoughts or questions or ideas for recommendations?
Thank you to the staff for doing all the work and putting this all together. I don't know that there are any big surprises in there, but it's nice to see it all in one, nice, I guess, being a relative word, but thank you for putting it all together and compiling it. I think it'll be useful.
Thanks, Laura.
And there were some really concrete recommendations in there that I could see as like a provider, like providers should, you know, devote a room for, you know, clients to use for telehealth visits. So I could see like some concrete like recommendations coming out of there. Sorry, you're just asking for reactions, like general reactions right now? Yeah. So that's kind of like what's sticking out to me is like there's some like applicable lessons right now.
Yeah, I mean, reactions or actual recommendations, if you have some insight into something you've seen or just something that just popped into your head now that can help sort of address some of those things. And I think it's also important to think about like where our ability to recommend things comes from and how much money potentially we can. And I think that is a piece that is absolutely doable. I think the two pieces that really stood out were learning from all of the challenges that we've seen in the last 2 years. We don't know if things are going to go back to normal anytime soon. It seems like we're on track for things to sort of return to some sort of normalcy, but we don't know. But even if that is the case, there are a lot of things that we learned here that potentially we could use in a world, in a pre-COVID world, that to address people's challenges. And I think the idea that this sort of forced people to develop a comfort and familiarity and sort of ability to use some telehealth and remote access to services for consumers is a bonus in some ways going forward. And I think that service providers' willingness to actually engage in that when they maybe weren't previously, having medical providers who are willing to see you remotely. I mean, the amount of clients I had over the years who were fired from their medical provider because they weren't making appointments, they weren't following up with their appointments, and that sort of thing. Potentially this kind of thing alleviates that. We don't know. I think the other aspect of that is continued training towards that goal, and then material support around technology, tablets, Chromebooks, whatever, things that are not, terribly expensive. A few $1,000s can go a long ways towards making those available to people who really need them, potentially. I feel like there was another piece in there, but now I've lost it.
Are you asking for like something actionable as a result of this report?
Generally, we would love if we could come up with something that was very concrete and had at least some sort of sketch of an outline or, an idea of where maybe we house this, what type of provider has the capacity for this, and where do we find the funding for it? Oftentimes we use carry forward funding. If we can have something that is that we can make a motion around that we can recommend to HHS to potentially utilize carry forward funding in a sort of appropriate timeline, that would be the ideal goal as far as I'm concerned. But I also think that sort of larger scale sort of principle-based learning and understanding how we prioritize things is also valuable. But for me, if the council's power and leverage lies within funding allocation, I think that the appropriate place to start with recommendations is how to address challenges via the funding we have available to us.
Sorry, Derek, I saw you on mute. Were you going to say something?
Sure. There was a couple of thoughts that had come to mind, and actually I did kind of think that we are in sort of this interim period of being both in and post restriction. There's a lot more hybrid work that's going on, and I know that has always been a tough sell how to do hybrid communications. I will say, like, I am aware that there's a number of folks that are more homebound, that this sort of telephonic opportunities really super work for. It connects them in ways that they wouldn't be able to otherwise. The downside, of course, is it challenges, it removes some of the challenges for folks to find ways of getting out and about and doing connections with folks. And so that might continue to be an issue if the idea is to get people to move out from where they are. I've tried hybrid groups. It is really difficult, but it's not impossible. Some of it does have to do with the support around the technology that's needed. So for instance, if I can call in someone on my cell phone, if I don't have some place to put my cell phone so that that person can see everyone, or at least everybody can see the person, that just becomes a difficulty to manage, which sometimes can be quite hard. Some of the limitations, for instance, I had a blind client who wouldn't mind being called in, but of course, like it was really difficult to figure out how to do that with them all the time in ways that supported him. So for instance, like he couldn't necessarily hear all the audio, and it was hard for us to sometimes hear his audio. So that sort of support would be definitely needed. I seem to be aware that there was some support around older folks getting up to speed around the internet and these sort of connections. I think there was a group that was doing it. I forget the name of it right now. So it'd be interesting to hear from them what they would need to sort of like capacity up in terms of supporting more aging folks in catching up with the technology. In terms of folks that are more homeless, I seem to get a mixed bag. Like some guys seem to have access to cell phones and are quite savvy around how to make it work for them. And then there's folks that are just, you know, it's just not a possibility. You kind of have to meet them where they are.
I'm curious to see what Beth thinks about what Ben put in the chat. Just to sort of the viability of something like that.
Right, in case anybody hasn't seen the chat, that is the idea to have carry forward funding support the development of telehealth guidelines, probably more specifically for HHS providers, something like a harm reduction policy, but a telehealth best practices and some of the COVID materials. I think there's a few ways to do that. The normal mechanisms we use, one, not through HHS normally, during this public health emergency, there has been a section of the emergency response that has put out guidelines and clinical guidelines in particular. So we could check in about what they have already done or what they plan to do or what they can do. And that would be of no cost to us. So we could just, you know, communicate that back. That's one option. The other two things we do is we do sometimes do, I don't know if we always pay for them, but like there's sort of like best practices guidelines for some subpopulations. And we've done that in the past. And we usually go to the agency that is the lead on that subpopulation. And often they have researchers to do that. Another thing we sometimes do is, I mean, we are always doing trainings, professional development trainings for that all of the providers can attend. And so we could hire a trainer who is an expert in this area. So there are quite a few ways to do it. So it's certainly a viable area and you know, can be fleshed out quite a bit more, either by this group or we can work on proposals.
Yeah, I mean, that all sounds very reasonable. It would be nice if there was something built into, I mean, the council sort of has purview over, you know, some amount of best practices and that kind of stuff, it would be might be worthwhile sort of examining something coming directly from the council around what that looks like. And as far as what Derek was saying around sort of hybrid meetings, I've been in hybrid meetings that worked. I've been in a lot of hybrid meetings that super, super didn't work. I think we can all think about our state Department of AIDS calls from in full council before COVID and how poorly that went pretty consistently. And in my experience, the answer to hybrid meetings working effectively is money, is technology. The technology exists, but where does the money come from to make sure that people have what is needed? I don't actually have anything like an answer for that, because I know potentially to lift everyone up to the level that we can make that viable as a sort of an option seems like a lot, but there's got to be a place to start.
I wonder also if this could include anything about like outdoor space for groups, whether there was like, I don't know how many agencies have access to some kind of outdoor space, but I wonder if for like certain groups or situations, it might be helpful to have that as an option.
I know I've been doing them. We've had two outside activities for the guys that I work with over the last couple of months. And it is a great way of mediating a lot of sort of safety concerns and pair them with the need to socialize and decrease the isolation.
So I guess I'm feeling a little bit conflicted about this. I think it's always a good idea to reflect back and find out, you know, what didn't work for our clients, right? And produce a report and or recommendations around what would improve the client experience around accessing care. I think that's generally where I would like to leave it. I don't know if I'm really reluctant to do any micromanaging. As far as carryover funds are concerned, I mean, we can make a recommendation, but it would have to be something really, really concrete. Like we want to put money into a specific thing. That would just be one recommendation of many that's going to come throughout the year, right? Towards the end of the year. Towards the fall, so it'll just be one of the things that get considered for the carryover funds.
Certainly, and I think that as far as something very concrete, I mean, so we've heard from in the provider survey response that there are some agencies who are seeing clients in person who are then providing private Zoom spaces for those clients to interact with their other service providers who they are only able to see remotely. Without that client might not be able to access that service, which seems a very valuable sort of use of space and resources. It seems to me we do know what types of agencies might be most likely to be able to manage something like this. Maybe we think about using some carry forward funds to provide them with material goods like additional tablets or computers for client use, and maybe some training around that kind of thing. And we can reach out to service providers who, I mean, and I think that the obvious answer is service providers who work with the unhoused, service providers who often work in sort of a drop-in basis. You know, I'm thinking like Lutheran Social Services or, you know, Glide or something along those lines probably could manage something along those lines. I'm open to other options there. But just off the top of my head, it seems like that seems like a concrete recommendation that we could put forward if people were comfortable with that. As well as sort of Ben's recommendation.
Sorry, I totally forgot what was in the report already, Melina. Did connectivity come up at all?
Do you mean like internet reliability?
Well, like what we're noticing with our clients is the issue isn't access to a tablet or like a laptop, like the actual thing is easy to access or a lot more affordable these days. It's actually like paying monthly for internet or like Wi-Fi or a cell phone plan. Like that seems to be the majority of our clients' access issues versus the actual tablet or laptop itself. And like we're still challenged with like working with like Boost or other types of providers to figure out a workaround to give like a client a 6-month like connection, like subscription to their service in exchange for like attending sessions for 6 months or something. Like that's kind of what we're grappling with still. So I'm just wondering if that came up.
Yeah, it did. I mean, we heard both that some people didn't have access at all to phones or maybe like lost their phone, and also that they didn't have reliable internet. So we're coming up on 4.
Let me just add that when we provided seed money for the 50 plus groups, it ended up being just seed money, right? It wasn't meant to solve the entire problem. And I'm feeling really like this is not a problem we can solve on our own. We could provide some recommendations. We could perhaps provide a little seed money for a organizations to start tackling this and be like a pilot program, but there has to be other funding. You know, we can't tackle this. It's too big of a problem for us to take on. It's not really even under our purview. So I'm feeling really conflicted about this. I mean, I feel really bad about how the pandemic hit. Clients were not getting the services they want. And I think there's value in kind of reflecting back and providing a report on this is what we saw, and these issues need to be resolved, but I don't know if it's really up to us to resolve them.
Yeah, I know I need to go, but just to echo Lee on that, like it's, this is a big issue. And I think thinking about what the council can do in terms of maybe it's about putting forward a set of best practices to ensure equitable access, or finding best practices and publicizing them to our providers, rather than necessarily trying to use Planning Council funds to solve this. Just to kind of echo what Lee said, and now I'm gonna jump off, sorry about that.
Yeah.
But thank you for this conversation.
I would really love to see all of the things that you talked about, Melina, brought into a report that we can then go over one more time to just kind of proofread it, but come up with this conceptualized recommendations about how we can improve access to care for clients that were left out during the pandemic, right? And just submit that.
I see TJ's hand.
Thanks, Melina. I agree with Lee. I think it's a much bigger problem, but I also feel like we should, you know, HIV services under DPH is not the only problem. Like there's other sections of DPH, and I'm sure they've had the same problem. So why are we not trying to do what we actually can do, but also maybe try to get DPH to work with us and or have a bunch of organizations sign on to a letter about this to the mayor's office and try to, you know, push the idea, whether it gets done or not, of trying to provide access somehow.
It's a really great idea, TJ. We could use the HIV client access issue or concern as a way to point out to a broader issue of medical access during a pandemic, right? Broaden it up and saying, look, this is what our population is telling us. There's got to be other issues across the medical community, right? The client population across San Francisco. So, but this is how we see it that needs to be addressed.
I just had a question around that, what you were just saying, Lee, there. I kept on thinking that this was much more of a psychosocial concern rather than a medicalized one.
I hear you. And that will never get resolved when we're sheltered in place. I mean, I have clients who literally stopped going to recovery groups because they didn't want to do it over Zoom. In a medical pandemic, there's no way you can get people together and feel safe enough to do that. Providers aren't going to do it. Department of Health, DPH is not going to allow it, right? So I hear you, but that will never get resolved because bringing people together in a pandemic just can't happen. It's not safe.
So from a sort of next steps functional perspective, it sounds like maybe the only real strong recommendation we have here is around maybe developing some best practices around how this how we approach sort of remote care and telehealth. Under the things that the council has purview of, and potentially some sort of statement around there needed to be a more a broader coalition of voices towards additional resources to address the specific issue of access, technology access. Whether that is connectivity, whether it's material, having access to a tablet computer, spaces within agencies, whatever. I do think that sometimes the way to get the ball rolling on that is, as Lee said, is a pilot program, which we've done before. We clearly can't commit to ongoing funding, though sometimes that does take place. But so I just, from our, because we got to move on to the next item, but I just wanted to sort of, it feels like the consensus from the group is those two things are what we should focus on in way of recommendations. The last bit I wanted to sort of talk about really quickly around this is presentation-wise, we are left with a little bit of a conundrum here because, I mean, it's a small sample size. We don't really have, you know, I don't necessarily know where to go with how this is sort of laid out to you guys. Sort of the graphs and charts with demographic information and all that stuff is essentially non-information here because it was such a small sample size and it's all people you guys know. It's your peers on the council largely. Using that sort of demographic stuff would be pointless. So no pretty charts and graphs. And oftentimes those pretty charts and graphs are just telling us what we already know. That stuff varies not a very significant way year to year. I have heard that people would like to see more around sort of the qualitative aspect of what the needs assessment. I mean, to my mind, the needs assessment is a component piece to the quantitative presentations that the council gets from EPI and ARES, and looking at this is sort of like, what is the human experience on the ground? That said, I have noted that when we do focus on the sort of narrative, without as many charts, people tune out. So I'm curious as to what people's thoughts are around what they'd like to see from us presentation-wise. How this can be most effectively shared. Also, I saw Beth had her hand up. I didn't want to, it was up and it went down.
That was kind of on the outgoing topic of possible pilots to fund it. And I'm sort of out on a limb on what I know, but just sort of aggregating a lot of the comments, it sounded like a lot of what our particular knowledge is, maybe just within this group, but is of the psychosocial support group hybrid model and how making that work is not easy and is something somebody needs to take on. And I know there is some technology, I don't brand wise, I probably should have mentioned, but there's something called an OWL where you can, like, there's things where that, like, in like really nice expensive meeting rooms, they have this technology that can like focus in on one person at a time and solve some of the audio and sound problems from the in the room part. It doesn't do anything for the outside of the room, the people at home part. But it could be that we like have a very specific type of pilot to do a specific thing that could then be generalized in other ways later. So that was my other comment on that.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thomas has his hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Dave for the question and just ask people to weigh in. So there, Dave and I spoke last week, and I was saying basically like a lot of the data that we receive is kind of just validates kind of what we all know. And so how do we still capture that? But at the same time, what are our opportunities to either, I actually like the narrative better and the story and things along those lines. So that is that's my lens. And there's an openness to change something or to improve something here. So I just wanted to invite people into the space and kind of put out a little bit of a wish list at the moment and just kind of do a quick little brainstorm around what that might look like. Is that fair, Dave?
Also, just to jump in super quick, it's 4:05 and we're ending at 4:30. So if it's possible to just talk for a few more minutes and then move on to this year's needs assessment target, that would be awesome.
Or Melina, I feel like we could just pose the question we just questioned just now for a later meeting, right? Just say, what's our format gonna be? Or what we would like to see, what we would like to learn as a group or as a body, like what's going to influence our funding decisions.
Thank you, Thomas, for that. I think also Dave's question about how you all would like to receive this information is relevant now because we're presenting on this at the end of the month. I think maybe after we hear from Beth and TJ, if we don't come up with if we need more recommendations, you all could just also email us. Thanks, Thomas. And I think, I don't know if it was TJ first or Beth.